You're listening to the Ebenezer Podcast. On this podcast, we are remembering how God has helped us. And so on this pod, you're going to hear from Giorgio and Eric and myself, Justin, as well as different people, a part of Redeemer Church, Winston-Salem, as we testify to the ways God has helped us, as we wrestle with the story of God and the story of us. Thanks for listening. Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're really glad that you're joining us. My name's Justin, and I'm glad to be here today with my good friends, my norteños. I'm here today with Zach and Carly Haynes. Why don't you guys say hey?
What's up?
Hey, y'all.
As we begin, so this is the New Mexican pod today. Me and Brian doing all the mixing, and Zach and Carly. And so, Zach and Carly, we were just talking before the pod about how they've been here just over a year, and I've been here just over two. And so I thought we'd start off with some New Mexico questions and some North Carolina questions. So when you think about moving here, like, what's the thing you miss most about our Norteño home?
The flavor, definitely. I think you get good Mexican food here. Like, it hits, but the New Mexican flavor is sorely lacking in
it is
in restaurant venues. It's unique. It's like the red chili, the green chili, the vibe. Like, yeah, the salsas are different. I don't know.
That's true, dude.
I miss it.
Yeah, it's definitely something I'm sure any New Mexican who moves to North Carolina misses. What about you, Carly?
I was talking with the Whippos the other day, and they had recently visited Albuquerque, and we haven't been back. But they were like, we stepped off the plane, and the air was crisp.
Yeah.
It was crispy.
Yeah, crispy air.
Yeah, I really do miss that. And, yeah, like, the view of the mountains, for sure.
Yeah, it's even crispy in the summer, y'all. So, like, that crispy air in the morning is definitely something to miss.
So crispy.
What would be one thing that is most different between our two locales?
I'm going to jump right in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's proximity to family.
Yeah, that is a big,
like,
difference.
Immediate family. So my parents are in Albuquerque, and it was a struggle to navigate that dynamic, especially, like, with hindsight.
Yeah.
Now that I realize how difficult it was just for our family and my wife, and the way they had major expectations for us.
Yeah.
That we would never live up to. But now that we're out here, totally flips that on its head.
Yeah. So one of the unique things about, you know, y'all's story is that, and Brian's wife, Rachel, is it, like, New Mexico's been, like, it. And so, like, that's what you know. And so, you know, making a big move to a new place, like, that's a huge deal. And it's a huge deal for something like what you mentioned, Zach, but it's also a huge deal just because, like, you've never really lived anywhere else. And so it's almost like for the two of you, like, you're starting, like, a whole new thing. You're not tied down to any of your family traditions, and what, you know, what you do on a Tuesday night in the middle of February is, like, totally disconnected from family, and that can be disorienting, and it also can also be somewhat freeing. And so that's a good one. What about you?
Yeah. We were talking before the pod about this, but just the culture is very different.
Yeah.
And sometimes find myself kind of, like, we're talking about at church, I'm fig leafing. And a lot of people are like, hey, what are your qualifications? What do you do?
Yeah.
What board are you on?
Right.
And I'm like,
what university did you go to? You,
yeah,
know, what ACC school or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And, like, I've been hanging out with some RUF kids, and I'm really trying to learn how to relate to, mm-hmm, university culture.
Yeah.
And I have so many questions for them.
Yeah.
And it's funny to be the adult in that scenario where I'm like, I don't know about your life, but please tell me about it.
Yeah, yeah.
New Mexico just doesn't have the
It does the not. And culture. That's, yeah, people definitely ask you, what do you do? It's not that, but no one is asking what school you went to unless they're asking what high school you went to.
Exactly.
Because what high school you went to in the Berkey, oh, yeah, like tells you something about who you might be, and no one's really talking about college, and that is a big difference. Okay, then what's one thing that you really have enjoyed, or that's like been a kind of surprise about living here?
Gardening, being able to grow things, yeah, without them dying and wilting and withering and starving for life.
Yeah,
I remember like trying to grow tomatoes in my yard and just wasting so much water, doing so much to try to shelter them from the like dry sun. And here you just literally plant it. We grew thousands of tomatoes over, yeah, the summer and set it and forget it.
It is really remarkable. Y'all don't understand. Like if you really want to grow anything in New Mexico, it really does have to be watered like crazy. And if you want a lush lawn, like you got to have timers, money, and automatic sprinklers, and it is costly like to have a nice like garden and lawn in New Mexico. So, you know, also that humidity, you know, Zach, you out there, I see you out there mowing that lawn, bro.
Yeah, it's glorious.
He loves it.
Cold showers have never felt so good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
You
like,
love to mow the lawn.
I do. Yeah, yeah, I think that's become a rhythm, a summer rhythm.
Therapy.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. I scavenged. Okay, so in Ardmore, they throw their trash out like twice a year onto the side of the street, which is surprising.
Yeah. And the city comes and picks it up.
And the city just comes and it's gone. Or like...
Or other people.
Everyone else comes and picks it up and picks through it. And I was one of those. I asked my neighbor, "Hey, are you throwing away that mower?" And he said, "Yeah." Funny thing, it came from the other neighbor last year.
That's amazing.
And I got it running, and it's lasted the season. So
that's great.
It's like
it only caught fire once.
Yeah,
true. Yeah.
So we talk about these things, but like very much, place is embedded into our stories, and so on this pod, we are, you know, recollecting thus far God has been with us. So we're just testifying to the different ways that we've experienced God's help. Those are our Ebenezers. And so on our pod today, like we're talking about something really heavy and hard, as Carly and Zach have availed a lot of their story to me over the years, but also to a number of other people, and that struggle has been one with infertility. And so we're like talking about how God has been with you, and obviously that is not like that is not your foot always on the gas pedal. Like there is a lot of struggle of believing that in the midst of this, but how God has been with you wanting to have a family. So we'll kind of start into that. So infertility is often a hidden grief. And most people, if someone in Redeemer is struggling with it, it's probably unknown, right? Mm-hmm. And that was you. Mm-hmm. In some ways, right?
Yes.
So what was it like to carry something that many people did not know, especially early on, right? What was that like for y'all to carry that hidden grief?
This wouldn't be a podcast that included me unless I gave you a Taylor Swift song, mm-hmm, reference. Someone do that for you.
Yeah, let's go.
She wrote a song called Right Where You Left Me, and it's about, like, it captures that feeling so well, a feeling like frozen in grief, mm-hmm, and everything else is passing you, mm-hmm, and everyone else is passing you.
Right.
But you're just, she says, like, I'm still at the table sitting right there while everyone else has moved on. And every time I hear that song, I remember like being a member at City Press, our church in Albuquerque. And we started going to City Press when we got married, mm-hmm. which was when pretty much when you became the pastor there,
right.
when Brian started working there.
So right.
OG, rep the rooster.
OG.
All these families started going there at the same time. So we were all real young, like early 20s and freshly married. Nobody really had kids yet. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, okay, like we're all in this place of we're going to start having children. So let's go. And babies started being born. This like Deacon was one of these babies, mm-hmm. which was actually really cool. Mm-hmm. Like surprise, we're having a Deacon. And that was one of our first Sundays at City Press. Mm-hmm. And we had already kind of known that we would have trouble having babies because
Tell me about that. You don't need to get into like all the science of that,
the whole lore.
So what was that like when you, I mean, knowing your own body and talking to, you know, going to the doc and knowing what's going on. So what was that, just the maybe to describe the anxiety that was already like loaded with this. Can you describe that?
We were so young.
That's a good thing to say, like as a caveat. Like
it's a caveat.
You guys got married. How old were you when you got married, Zach?
Yeah, we were 19.
19.
I don't know what our parents were thinking.
Let's go. Come on. Right. So there's a sense in which like you don't know what you don't know.
Yes.
Right. But at the same time, that doesn't change your longings and your hopes.
Yes.
They might be altered in some ways because you got married younger.
Yes.
And things might feel accelerated too. Like that's the other piece of this, right? So you get married a little bit younger maybe than the average person does, and life already starts to like accelerate mm-hmm. at a pretty rapid rate. And so then when you discover this is going to be difficult maybe for us to have kids, and you feel that push and that pull, it can be pretty disorientating,
I imagine. Yeah, like a very rapid timeline of it, because it is a lot. It's a lot. It's a decade worth of miscarriage, loss, up and down, battling God, mm-hmm. forgetting God, like beating on God's chest type of stuff. We got married. I had endometriosis, mm-hmm. PCOS, all my adolescence.
And which doesn't just cause like potential infertility issues. It also has a lot of pain.
Pain. Lots of in and out of like ERs wondering what is happening to me. So we kind of like had an inkling, hey, it might be pretty hard. But we didn't know. So like maybe a little crazy, we just kind of started trying right away.
Right.
19. Let's go. And we quickly realized like, oh, this isn't working out. And
it's not going to be automatic.
No.
Yeah.
And also quickly like had a miscarriage straight away, like 8 weeks in. And so that pattern continued several times for like 3 years. And we didn't really understand like what was happening. Doctors didn't really. They're like, you have endometriosis, you have PCOS. And then, yeah, just loss. And then we were like, okay, we're really exhausted. This is really hard. Okay, God, like hands off, like stopped white knuckling it.
Yeah.
And that is when we found out about Isla.
Fascinating.
And it was we had actually tried a few like fertility procedures to try to attempt to have a baby, but then like Isla just happened naturally and it was crazy. And it was like eggshells the entire time. Mm. It was like waiting for the shoe to drop. But then she was like born healthfully.
Yeah. And one thing I distinctly remember about those like early days before our first daughter, Isla, was like praying together and saying, God, we trust you with our fertility.
And that's a scary thing to pray. Right?
Mm-hmm. I don't think I understood the gravity of it until like this last year. But we did that. And I think I'd reference it in disappointment or reference that moment like as that's kind of silly to pray when this isn't even happening.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Again, that was like I was 20. And I thought, well, I mean, we thought we had it all together, of course. And yeah, that was tricky to navigate, definitely on my part, just from a, I guess, male perspective. Like, I don't have to carry a baby.
Yeah.
I have the...
Largely, some of this stuff is happening outside of you.
Exactly.
But it very much impacts you inside.
It does. Yeah. And I didn't... I thought being stoic was like the way to be at one point. And that was not the way to be. I realized that empathy and trying to understand what Carly is going through and the pain that she's feeling and the inadequacy that she's feeling was imperative to me, like to us growing together and moving forward.
Yeah.
Through this infertility.
Yeah, that's deal. Good, Zach.
Yeah.
When you found out that you were having Isla, you know, what was that like?
I know I was joyful.
Yeah.
And it was so exciting. And it is that hopeful yet cautious.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it took us like almost 2 years to after we started trying to have Jed. That's not a long time. So I want to just preface that if you're listening to this and, you know, this is part of your story. I want to emphasize, like, many of you have maybe been suffering through this for years. And so 2 years and maybe you've even given up. And so 2 years doesn't feel like anything. But when you're in the middle of it, it felt like a long time. And I'll never forget where I was standing in our little apartment in Georgia when Danette had taken a test and revealed to me that we were having a baby, and the level of relief and joy that kind of washed over me was real. Mm-hmm. I remember we had like a denim comforter, and I was just looking at that denim comforter. And I started crying. And then I, you know, grabbed hold of her after a second. I probably should have done that a lot sooner. And so there is this like sense of relief, right? Mm-hmm. But then the fear sets in, which is what you kind of described.
Yeah.
Is like, we're having a baby. I hope ugh, we're having a baby. And if you've had miscarriages already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe like describe, because this... Just to like fast forward in their story a little bit, like this was just the beginning of this story. We're going to talk more about that, but there's been many miscarriages.
Mm-hmm.
How many?
You know what? That's such a hard question.
Yeah.
I think part of this journey is like, there's unknown with when you're already dealing with like endometriosis, PCOS, and like trying for a baby, and it's just really complex.
Yeah.
And the grief of so many like known losses, you just kind of stop keeping track. And that was how it was for me.
Yeah.
I wasn't like the first two I remember, I hold dates. And then after that, I was just kind of like waving a middle finger at God.
Yeah.
And like, I think kind of like you suppress trauma.
Yeah.
Like I just started not keeping track.
Right.
It's like the two hand. There were many.
Yeah.
Some further along than others.
And that I think you hit on something, and this is going to be different for, you know, listeners here who've had this. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we had someone else in our church who had in the two hands number of miscarriages that you guys talked about some of this stuff,
mm-hmm,
as you were going through it. But, yes, you know, she, this person was very like, you know, they kept track of all things,
yeah,
but they kept a real close track, and you, mm-hmm, you kind of didn't. And so I want to like ask, is part of that like, is there fear that kind of might drive that, like not wanting to actually know how many there were?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Just, yeah, in the same way that you don't want to remember hard things about when you're a kid, or that blackout sensation of like, I don't know when that was or when it happened. I know it happened.
Yeah.
I felt it.
Yeah.
Certain things remind me of it. like specifically the winter and snow.
Yeah.
I remember driving.
Which seems appropriate, just based on like as a metaphor for what that probably feels like.
Yes. But like at one point after we lost a baby, we were driving around in the car in the snow. And like, it's a very visceral memory for me. Like, so I think I associate it more with those sorts of things because I did not keep dates after a while.
Yeah. Because it was just too painful, too scary.
Yeah.
Oh, we've talked about in this series, just like Ebenezer's tell the truth, right? Mm-hmm. And so part of the struggle of this is learning to tell the truth, right? Mm-hmm. To yourself and to God and to other people. So like what part of, you know, how was telling the truth about this for you? Like when I think about both to God, to yourself, and to others, like what did that, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. This is something that has uniquely like impacted my relationship with church, specifically at my old church where I was super deeply rooted and all of my friends were my best friends and will always be.
Yeah.
Was like, here I am again. You're moving forward. I'm here. And I begin to feel like old news. I felt like a burden. I felt like a buzzkill.
Yeah.
People stopped inviting me to baby showers out of thinking that they were being careful.
Yeah.
Which is valid for some people.
Right.
But it wasn't for me because it just made me feel more other, more alienation.
Yeah.
And there was so much deep alienation that I started to believe the lie that I was an alien.
Yeah.
And just like there was a point in our whole journey that I was like, okay, I don't want to come anymore.
Yeah.
It's too much.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's also like physical markers. One of my greatest friends has a son and he was born and mine was not.
Yeah.
Same pregnancy timeline.
Yeah.
So even now I'll see a picture and I'm like, ugh,
that's it really still tough. Hits you. Like, and this is kind of where this feels alone. And maybe Zach, you can talk about how this felt for you to be alone in this. And if you felt alone in this, but like there is this sense in which you said you feel like you're other and that people are passing you by and you're not like intentionally being ostracized. And some of this is like a back and forth. Like you feel that internally, even if someone else isn't necessarily you're almost projecting it, you know, and in some sense, but at the same time, there is a reality to that. Like, how do we talk about kids if Carly's here?
Yes.
'Cause they're trying to be sensitive to like what you're going through and like careful to not bring up the wounds, and then that just creates a whole nother wound.
Exactly.
Right. What about you? Can you like think about how this felt? Did you feel some of that alienation or?
Yeah. In a sense, I think I had a different set of community and it's always like guys and girls a little
bit. Yeah.
Like,
in that sense, it could be a little bit different.
That plays like differently into the way I experienced the community surrounding us for, I guess, the support we felt or I just didn't have the, I don't think, emotional awareness or capacity to truly understand what Carly was going through. And
what about to talk about it yourself?
Yeah.
Right. Like it can be hard if you're trying to like make sense of it. It can be hard just to talk about it, even know how to talk about it with another, you know, you and Brian, for instance. Just how do you even talk about it?
I don't think I was, again, I was like trying to be stoic and not really letting people in.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. So what do you think at the root of that avoidance? Like, what do you think was at the heart of trying to avoid feeling?
I think it was a mask of like, everything is good.
Yeah.
We're happy.
Yeah.
And it was just easier to say, oh, Carly's not at church because she's not feeling well.
Yeah.
And like, and get that like quick, oh, I'm sorry. And then like move on with my day.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was safe.
Yeah, that's good.
Not to let people in to that.
And this is, we've been talking a lot about false selves here, and this is just like, I want to be clear, like, are we adopt false selves as a means of protection? It's not usually intentional to evade. It can be, right? But oftentimes it's a way to like almost parent ourselves, like to protect ourselves where something doesn't feel safe. And so we cover up. And so, you know, I'm the stoic one becomes an easy false self to wear in your suffering. Like, because to both admit it to yourself and to others can be very, very challenging. And it's easier to like say, like to not let anybody see you like sweat. And that's a very real thing.
Right? Yeah. Not, I guess reflecting on it, it was a lot of lack of control.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do anything. I wish that I could have been the problem.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure in some like level I was, but I don't know. I always think there's so many factors and every like birth is a miracle.
I think that's really good though. I think that like, you know, when you're in a marriage, there is this self-giving love, even in hard marriages, self-giving love, where it's like, I know like my wife's body's not cooperating with pregnancy, and I wish it was my thing to bear and not hers. Like, that's a real thing. I think it's a really normal thing for a spouse to feel for the other spouse. It might be easier for us if that was the case. Of course, it isn't, but it feels that way, right? All right, so Isla's this beautiful, wonderful girl. And like if you haven't met Isla, she truly is lovely, helpful, kind. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, her life is, there's this Ebenezer of like, God's faithfulness, and you all felt that. And yet, fast forward, there are many babies born. What's the difference in their age?
8 years.
8 years. So in this 8-year time period, mm-hmm. and lots of loss, there is all these babies. You know, we have this right now at Redeemer, just like a baby boom, and mm-hmm. like, and this is part of the silence of infertility, is like families are growing and yours is not. And that's a much longer period than this initial thing. And so, yeah, you kind of flew by that, but let's try to encapsulate those 8 years with some things.
Yeah.
What were some of the Ebenezers, in the good sense, during that 8-year period that you experienced and felt, even in the midst of like deep loss?
So we were part of City Press, and as hard as it was sometimes to be in a community that was growing so prolifically, while our family wasn't, these people, like, no matter how I was showing up, everyone was showing up for me. Mm-hmm. So like at the word that I was struggling in any way with infertility related anything or miscarriage, there were flowers at my door. Mm-hmm. There was food at my door. There was coffee. Mm-hmm. There was a friend to listen to me. There was someone who related to me.
And so even as you're doubting and angry mm-hmm. with the Lord in this season, what was that reinforcing to you? Or it was it?
Yes, it was. And I think in hindsight, because I did reach a point in which I was so resigned to faith.
This is my story.
Yeah.
Right. Like, resignation is this place of maybe not yet to despairing, but on the road to despair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember talking to my lovely friend Bronwyn about Christ being a tether, like, and us being tethered to God, kind of like whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Yep. And I have always felt that pull in my faith.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I did not grow up in a faith environment. My faith came like in my teens.
Right.
So that's always been a struggle, is to just like, God, are you real?
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I did come to Jesus, like, there's just this unchangeable, unshakable tether. Like, randomly think of Napoleon Dynamite every time, the tether ball. And yeah. Like, I am the ball and God is the pole and Jesus is the string.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cheesy, but I could be flying around that pole crazy, but I am still attached. Mm. And that's how I've always felt. And I remember, like, me and Bronwyn were hanging out and she was like, Carly, God is real. And she just kept telling me that. Uh-huh. And she's like, I know you don't want to hear it, but she was a very faithful friend to me.
Yeah.
When I was like saying a lot of slanderous things in my pain.
Yeah.
And that is what it looked like. It was nothing I did.
Yeah.
But I remained tethered somehow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And all of those like little things, you know, Lewis talks about all the good things that God gives us, like he uses it. You guys might have heard me say this in a sermon before, but the man in the shed, and yes, it's all surrounded in darkness, and there's just this one little light that goes through. And that Lewis is kind of making this point is like that light represents a gift from God. And if you like just stare at that beam of light and you think that's it, that's all there is, like you're missing out that there's something actually beyond the shed, that there's actually like a sun, and that every like gift from the Lord is like, that's what it's meant to do. It's to act as that beam of light that points us back to him. And so whether it is coffee, which Carly loves, both Carly and Zach,
big fan,
love coffee. They also like love, good food, and those things all become little tangible things that in the midst of forgetting, because this is the thing about Ebenezers, is that Ebenezers are to help, are an invitation to remember, and to remember honestly, that those things are all little invitations to just remember God has not forgotten you. And yet, when you're in the middle of it, everything about your life probably feels like God's forgotten you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my major complaint.
Yep.
During, like, you think I'm asking you for a baby. Mm-hmm. And this is also in a way that like my faith is very narrow, that God is presented like a genie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not. Mm-hmm. And I've learned along the way that you're not asking for three wishes. Yeah. And he's not granting them. And that's like prosperity gospel stuff.
Right.
It's not like that. It's like, hey, Carly, like I'm here with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I know this is hard. And I just remember thinking in those absolutes of like, you're giving me the baby or you're not. And if you give me the baby, you're real. And if you don't, you're not real.
Yeah.
And that's not how it works.
Yeah. So when you're in the middle of like wanting God to give you something and you're suffering because it's not what you want, can you see anything that God might be doing in that moment through the suffering?
Yes.
So is that only known, and she said yes, is that only known in looking back, or how is that like experienced in the middle? Does that make sense?
It's really different.
Yeah.
The middle of the experience is stark from after it.
Right.
But this is actually a great segue into telling you about Chloe. So the middle of it, yeah, painful, dark, doubt. But the hindsight of it. So Chloe, I'm gathering my thoughts. Sorry. 8 years, that was way longer that we struggled through than when we did for Isla. It was 3 years before Isla. And then when Isla was born, we were like, oh, we can have kids now. Like, we thought that,
yeah,
we're thinking like,
yeah,
in absolutes.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, the door's open.
Yeah.
So after she was born, we're like, okay, more. And then there came way harder, deeper,
yeah,
worse, longer,
yeah,
grief. And we really did. We were like trying for that long to have a baby.
Yeah.
We were like, I was seeing so many doctors. I probably know every OB in New Mexico. And then finally, like, I got to one. I got to this amazing woman. Her name's Meredith. Shout out.
Shout out, Meredith.
Yeah, yeah. She was like, hey, Carly, like, you have a uterine septum. Hmm. You were born with this. Hmm. No one has ever seen this. You have had a baby with this. And I was like, what? What?
Yeah.
And she's like, this is crazy. Like, and then we looked back at Isla's ultrasounds and there's just this huge honking like thing that nobody noticed, which is crazy. So she was like, I'm referring you to a fertility specialist. Finally, waited a long time for that.
Yeah, that's a long wait.
Because there's a guy in New Mexico who's like, honestly, really well known throughout the whole country for like fertility treatment. And so she referred me to him and I got there and it was the crazy, a lot of my medical experience has been like, I don't believe you. You're right. Just a woman.
Right.
Anything can happen. I don't know. And so for them to be like, no, this is a problem. Huh. And then there was suddenly this explanation for why I had miscarriages,
yeah. Wow.
Which came 8 years after tons of loss.
Right.
And it was like the biggest weight off my chest.
Wow.
Where they were like, no, there is a reason this is happening, mm-hmm. and it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And a lot of babies like aren't born from mothers who have this. Mm. And so Isla's life, like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But then I got it out. So I had this like series of surgeries where they removed it and it was really hard. And then after that, we were like, okay, so technically we should be able to have a baby now. Mm-hmm. Nope. It was not happening.
Yeah.
A couple years, still more. And so me and Zach were just like, honestly, no, like we're done.
Right.
This is nuts.
Yeah. This merry-go-round is too much.
Yes.
And we are very happy with Isla.
Yeah.
Like we have a full life and so much to do. And she's a vibrant girl that just brings everyone joy. So like,
and there was a sense like almost she was that was an Ebenezer in those moments.
Totally.
Of like, I remember us having lots of conversations about that reality and that she was this special gift from God that made you feel like God's love tangibly in some really real ways.
Yeah.
And you know, you're at this place where you're like, I'm okay, we're ready to step off the merry-go-round, is what you said, Zach.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Then what happened?
So Carly gets a job, like she's, we're going full bore.
Like my two life careers. Is transitioning now. Yeah. I'm done trying with
Isla's this. Busy in school. So Carly has time in the day and like Carly's never not been super busy or super active, I guess, in anything she's doing. She's always had three jobs.
Side projects.
Three hustles and, and part of the community and giving and serving and like that's just who she is. But like she was ready before we had Isla, she was ready to be a teacher's assistant. So she got back into teaching and she was in line to like be having her own class soon. And like we had shelved the book of infertility and wanting for another child. We had like become content with the blessing that we did have. I had grown a lot in my emotional maturity and
understanding your story.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, story work and being a part of like an authentic community. Like and being honest, like for the first time in my life. So that was a lot of growth and like super happy to be where we were, I think. And little did we know, God had other plans.
Yeah.
Yeah. You use the word content, but I just want to say, like, it was more of a grief for me.
Yeah.
Where, like, it was like, okay, we're closing that book. Yeah. It's a painful book. And I don't want to read that book anymore.
Right.
More of my avoidance.
Yeah.
And so we had moved on. I even, like, during the process of the like, surgeries and stuff, they were like, you can come get this, like, procedure that will, like, lessen your chances of pregnancy if eventually you just kind of need a break.
Yeah.
And eventually I did that. Uh-huh. So that was weird. That yeah. was like a other way.
Yeah.
But then honestly, really shortly thereafter, I was getting up to go to work, teach some first and second graders. And I was like, ooh, I don't feel good. This is a familiar feeling. Huh. But with that, I was like, oh no.
Oh yeah.
Like, I was so hesitant to take a pregnancy test.
I bet.
I was like, I have not done this for a long time, and even just to work up the courage to take one
yeah.
when you're in like an infertility journey.
I bet.
Because.
I mean, I have a hard time asking somebody a question that if I'm afraid about the answer is going to be. And so it's
literally,
like,
yeah,
it's like intensify that times a million. And
oh yeah. And also you just become like an expert at looking for lines that are not there.
Yeah.
You're like, no, there's a line. Right. This is real.
Right.
And texting your friends pictures and like saying, yo, do you see this? Cause it's there. And they're like, no,
yeah.
it's
a thing. Yeah.
Psychotic. However, Isla was there with me, my lovely Isla, who was, what was she? Seven? Seven?
Yeah, she was.
She was seven at the time, and we were late for school. Like, and I was like, okay, gotta take this. And like, lo and behold, two bold lines, like wow. No question.
Yeah.
And Isla knew. She was there. Like, she was, and she started sobbing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she definitely, like, walked the latter part of that section of the journey with us.
She mm-hmm. deeply longed to be a big sister.
Right.
And prayed to be a big sister.
Yeah.
And it hit her super hard. Mm. It was beautiful. Mm. And me too. Like, we're just crying.
And I get a call at work. I'm just sitting at my desk, and I get a FaceTime call from Carly, which is kind of odd. But it's not, like, particularly odd, but because I knew they were going to school, and sometimes she would call on their way just to say hey, but she hadn't left the house, and I was like, what's going on? And she's crying, and I'm like, I know exactly what, she's pregnant. Mm. And yeah, that wash of relief and just I was astounded and astonished, didn't quite know how to file that one.
Mm-hmm. So as you find this out, and then like what did the next several weeks look like?
Same day. We're like, oh, this is a gift. We understood what it was.
Yeah.
We went and told everybody.
Yeah.
Same day.
Like we did the round in Albuquerque, probably drove around for 3 hours telling all of our closest people, hey, we're gonna have a baby.
I love that.
When before we were so apprehensive and were like, oh, well, we better wait 3 months. And now we were sure of the gift. And
yeah, so and I remember when you told me.
Like, as soon as you guys can start praying.
I did.
I remember it. Justin just like grouped hugged us in the hallway at church. And I was like, he's not letting go. He's really not letting go.
It's like a, we have a friend at our old church, and he is known for like the longest, awkwardest hugs. And it was one of those moments where, yeah, we were all crying. And that was a really special moment. And it was special for me to be able to come back and baptize her. You know, she hates me. She doesn't want anything to do with me.
Yeah.
But we,
side eye.
One day I'll tell her how much we prayed for her. And it was a gift. And so it was, it does feel, I mean, it was an impossible prayer request many years. And then it wasn't, because it was too scary to pray. And then it was again. And it was Isla's impossible prayer request. And so it's beautiful to stand on the side of that and to see in the middle of it and on the bookends of this, God showing up in the ways he showed up. But if someone's listening and they're waiting and longing, because by this, I think we understand by the very nature of this podcast, it's painful. Because there are people who are waiting and longing and have no children. And this just opens that wound up in some ways. But for those that are, what would you want them to know about God from your story? That's a big question.
God's timing is perfect.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, as hard of a pill that is for us to swallow. Like, yeah. He knows what's best and when the right time is. Yeah, and a quick like point of levity, like I never knew how many pregnancy tests I'd buy.
Yeah,
but like we bought a lot of pregnancy tests, so I think the best decision we ever made was to buy them online, and you could get like a pack of infinity of them
that
for
was
nothing.
Emily Spare, she bought me like a 300 pack.
Heck yeah!
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they just get simpler as they get cheaper, but like it's all testing for the same thing. So,
What about you, Carly? What would be the thing?
Even though, like, even that on this side of this, where I really received a delivering answer from God and a gift.
Yeah.
Like, I recognize that there are people who don't.
Yeah.
And I know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. Like, parts of me know what that feels like. Not now. But I can, like, think to myself several years ago and thinking, like, no, like, this isn't happening. It's, like, really uniquely despairing. Mm-hmm. And I would just say, like I said earlier, like, God's job isn't to give us what we want.
Yeah.
And that is a very hard pill to swallow. Like, yes, he wants our good. He wants our flourishing. But that means something different to him than it means to us.
Yeah.
And even something like, what our family should look like to us can sometimes be an idol.
Yeah.
And I've really learned that. Like, there was a lot of envy in my heart of what was happening in other people's families.
Yeah.
And that fed my anger with God.
Yeah.
So I think if I could tell myself, like several years ago when I was really in it, like I would say, hey, Carly, like God is with you.
Yeah.
He's with you. He knows what this feels like.
Mm-hmm.
His job is to be with you.
Yeah.
Like the fall is really why this is happening.
Yeah.
And it is not God's fault.
Yeah.
And he does have a plan for your life.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't look like what you think it looks like. And even though Chloe and Isla are momentous, amazing gifts, they did not save me. Yeah. Like, wow, surprise,
right.
Carly. They didn't save me.
Yeah.
Every day when it's 5 p.m., I am so angry.
Yeah.
Because my kids are bothering me.
Right.
These children that I prayed for all this time
are
just like irritating the heck out of me. They didn't save me.
Yeah.
My story is still hard. Yeah. My struggle is still hard. And I would for sure tell somebody that, that an answered prayer, like life's a mixed bag of joy and delight and despair and awful things.
It is.
And I think like learning to hold those two and knowing that they can exist at the same time is a really big deal.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah.
And jumping back into what I would tell myself, like as hard as it is and as odd as it feels to push yourself to this point, is step deeper into community.
Yeah.
Like, and find that group of people or that one person that you can tell anything to. Yeah. And like, be real with them. Like, yeah. Honestly, be real with them. And that was, I guess it was a very impactful stage in my life, is realizing that, oh, I need this.
Yeah.
This is Jesus, the Holy Spirit, coming through other people.
Yeah.
The other parts of the body.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, Zach. And I think that's, you know, our and that is part of our hope with what we're trying to do in the pod and some of the stories that we're telling, is that they are to act as invitations, to consider God in light of other people's stories, an invitation also to like empathize with one another, an invitation to share yourself and your stories with someone else, to venture out into this place. And we want to try to be a safer community so those things can happen. And so I'm really thankful for you both coming on and sharing this part. And if you are in the middle of this, well, we are praying for you. And even if you're unknown to us, and all the things to what you said, Carly, is that to all the things that you feel, that God is big enough to take all of it. And he's present to you in spite of it, you know, all the envy, all the bitterness, the despair. We believe that God is there in the middle of in the darkest parts. And that's where, you know, resurrection is born, in the darkness of the tomb and through the cross and suffering. And so thanks for sharing a little bit of your story of that. Yeah, that's a good one. Thanks for joining us. And we're thankful for the Haynes being here in Winston and telling us their journey. So, Ebenezer, God is with you. Thus far, God has helped. Hold on to that this week.